Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. On this week's show, we speak with a leading advocate for the funding of research into Alzheimer's, one of, if not the top, cause of death in the United States. It's worth listening, both for his informed advocacy and for his refusal, all too typical, to go after funding where the big pile of money sits. While terrorism is not a leading cause of death in the United States, we dump 57% of discretionary spending into militarism that generates a bit more terrorism. In response, listen as I ask our guest repeatedly if a bit of money might be moved from war to Alzheimer's research. As long as advocates for health, education, green energy, parks, and infrastructure refuse to go where the money is, they'll be fighting over crumbs, and among the victims will be those with Alzheimer's. I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week George Vredenburg. He is the chairman and the co-founder of the U.S. Against Alzheimer's Network. You can check out this website, usagainstalzheimers.org. George Vredenburg also serves on the National Alzheimer's Advisory Council. George Vredenburg, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Well, thank you for having me on.
It's terrific to have you on. You're doing terrific work. What exactly is this new study out in this journal called Neurology, and what does it tell us about Alzheimer's?
Well, the new study reports, after a fairly deep analysis of data that is well understood and actually collected at the request and with the financing of NIH, that the number of people who die each year due to causes attributable to Alzheimer's is slightly over 500,000 a year, which puts Alzheimer's on a rival with cancer as the second leading cause of death in America. CDC's estimates, based upon state death certificates, was that about 84,000 people died a year of Alzheimer's. Death certificates were known to be inaccurate, but no one had really gone through systematically to try and understand what was the true impact of Alzheimer's on mortality in America. And now we have an answer to that question.
And all of those numbers are for the United States. We don't really know about the other 95% of people.
All of those numbers for the United States and all those numbers for 2010. So probably the numbers are slightly higher now.
So when you say causes attributable to Alzheimer's, is that Alzheimer's directly killing people or Alzheimer's making people fall downstairs? Or what does that mean?
Well, in many instances, Alzheimer's, as you know, is Alzheimer's is a progressive degenerative disease that we initially identify with the loss of memory. But what is happening in your brain is that slowly the processes that are causing that memory loss are also causing your body to forget an awful lot of things, like how to swallow, like how to go to the bathroom, like how your heart should work. So what is happening is that Alzheimer's is causing deaths by pneumonia, because people forget how to swallow, and thus, in fact, food and other items that they swallow go down into their lungs. They have other organ failures, and they die of a variety of other immediate causes, but the underlying cause of that death is the result of a loss of neuronal and brain function due to Alzheimer's. So this particular study looked at a series of people, nuns in fact, that were studied throughout their lives every year in terms of exactly what their health conditions were. All of those brains and bodies were donated to science so that we had autopsies on all those people. And those researchers looked at the results and found out how many people converted to Alzheimer's and then died, as opposed to those who did not convert to Alzheimer's and what their life tenure was. And they extrapolated that to the American population. So they actually looked at people whom they knew precisely what was the cause of death, the underlying causative factor, as well as the immediate factor. The most dramatic example is the fact that we know that Ronald Reagan had Alzheimer's for a number of years and that his entire bodily function shut down. But his death certificate reads pneumonia. So the death certificate is not reporting accurately the underlying cause of the death of, in that case, a president of the United States.
And that's typical, apparently, of hundreds of thousands of death certificates.
That's correct.
How does the death rate from Alzheimer's compare to other causes of death in the United States, and how does the investment in research into fixing the problem compare?
Cancer death rates are slightly over 500,000, so this now rivals cancer as a killer in the United States. Heart disease is still the number one killer of both men and women. In terms of investment in research, cancer has about $6 billion in NIH investment a year going towards cancer research. Alzheimer's has about $550 million a year going to research. So the disparate investments in cancer and in Alzheimer's is quite at odds with the fact that Alzheimer's is an equal killer to cancer. Moreover, we know from a study that was released last year by RAND that the cost to American society as a result of cancer are about $65 to $70 billion a year. The cost to society of Alzheimer's is something north of $105 to $110 billion a year. So cancer is a killer. We need to invest in its prevention and treatment, but we need as a society to invest that same cancer size resource in order to get at a means of prevention and treatment for Alzheimer's.
So Alzheimer's kills about as much and costs the economy more and gets about a tenth the funding in terms of searching for a cure.
That's correct.
Has progress been made in terms of searching for a cure? Is there reason to think there are avenues that should be pursued that need the resources? Or are there cures, but the problem is making them available?
Well, we don't have any medicines on the market today that can prevent, can cure, or even slow down this disease. The last drug that was approved for an Alzheimer's indication was memantine, and that's over 10 years ago. And that drug simply treats some of the symptoms for some people for a short period of time. Valuable, but nevertheless not an effective means of treatment, let alone prevention. There are now in the pipeline a number of potential candidate drugs, which if they report out, as we expect them to do in 2016, and if they report out some success in slowing the course of this disease, then we need to find those people who are at risk, give them those medicines before they get symptoms, and see if we can slow down the progress of the disease before they get symptoms so that they may never get symptoms. So there are drugs now in the pipeline being advanced against this disease. There are also some significant clinical trials that are actually testing medicines in special populations that we have a high degree of confidence will get Alzheimer's, and seeing whether or not those drugs will prevent the symptoms. Those drugs are being tested in small populations where there is a genetic mutation which will guarantee that you are going to get Alzheimer's in your 40s. So they're beginning to test those medicines in people in their late 30s. There is a test of those people who are in their 65 to 85 time frame who have a protein buildup in their brain called beta amyloid, and drugs will be tested in that population. And then there is a trial that will start next year which is going to be tested in those who have a somewhat higher genetic risk for the Alzheimer's. So those people would have a higher prospect of getting Alzheimer's, and drugs be tested in those populations. In each of those cases, it's an effort to find a means of preventing Alzheimer's, not just treating it.
Is there also a need, would it be appropriate for there to be more funding investigating the cause in terms of possible causes in diet or air or water pollution? I mean, do we know whether Alzheimer's is as old as our species or whether it began with the Industrial Revolution?
There are reported cases of people losing their mind with descriptions of that that go back centuries. So I don't think this is modern. What is modern is the fact that for 100,000 years, human lifespan on this earth has been 18 years. And in the last 150 years, we've now rocketed up to a lifespan of 75 to 80. So for the first time in human history, we are experiencing diseases that only become apparent with aging. This is happening with some forms of cancer. This is happening with Alzheimer's. And so it's not just Alzheimer's that is a disease of aging, chronic disease of aging, but Alzheimer's is one of the most dramatic, the longest, the most impactful, and the most financially devastating. So what's happened is, for the first time in history, men and women are living much, much longer than they have in the past. So it's not just a modern disease in the sense of it didn't exist before. It's the fact that it's coming to light in enormous numbers because of the length of time that we're living. There have been a number of studies of potential environmental impact, and there is some evidence that some environmental conditions may aggravate or accelerate the underlying disease. That's not that it is a cause, but that, in fact, your body has some natural capacities to resist the disease, which are, to some extent, compromised by environmental conditions. I'll take three. Now, one is heart disease. If you have a weak heart, if your circulation of your blood is not as it should be, then your brain does not have what it needs to have in order to fight off disease. Similarly, diabetes. So if, in fact, you have a metabolic problem and you don't have enough glucose in the brain, you are not going to have as much energy as you otherwise would have in your brain to fight off disease. And particulates in the air, which adversely affect the capacity of the brain to fight off disease. So the causes of this disease are endemic to the human condition and to the brain, but there are other co-occurring conditions or environmental conditions which may compromise your body's ability, your brain's ability to defend against it.
But when we talk about Alzheimer's growing, expanding, that's not because air pollution is worsening, but because the baby boomers are getting old.
That's correct. That is the primary and dominant element of why we're seeing more cases of Alzheimer's, and in which, and for why it is, remarkably, the two-thirds of the cases of Alzheimer's in the globe are in low and medium-income countries. Because for the first time in China, in India, in Brazil, and other low-income countries, or middle-income countries, people are fighting off infectious diseases and living long. So the most rapid growth in the numbers of people with Alzheimer's are actually occurring not in the industrialized world, but in the low and middle income countries. This is a global phenomenon. We have a little over 5 million people here estimated to have had to have Alzheimer's today. It's 44 million globally, and the number of caregivers estimated now to well over 100 million globally. In 30 years, the estimates of how many people globally will have Alzheimer's is 135 million. So this is a pandemic of the kind that we have never seen in human history, except for maybe, I'm not going to be dramatic, I was going to say the bubonic plague, which killed like a third of the people on the face of the earth at one point. That is, we're not talking about that scale, but we are talking about a scale that's significantly greater than HIV/AIDS. So when the G8 recently met in London in December of last year, the Prime Minister of England, David Cameron, said this is the global fight back against Alzheimer's of the kind that we launched against HIV/AIDS in England 10 years ago. We need that kind of scale and scope of response globally to get at this disease, because it is going to be greater in impact in terms of numbers of people and in terms of economic drag on society and the financial impact on families than HIV/AIDS had. So he is urging a fight back at that scale. And so that's what the G8 is working on now, extending to the G20 and to the OECD countries. So the global fight back has just now begun. And the opening gun has really been shot off by David Cameron of England.
While Alzheimer's in the United States from the government is getting some 10% of the funding that cancer research is getting, it's getting, I think, about 1/10,000th. Of what the military is getting. Have we reached a point where perhaps we need to shift our priorities more significantly and think of Alzheimer's research as national defense, as how what we ought to be defending ourselves from in terms of a real, honest-to-goodness threat?
There's no question that if you thought that an enemy of the United States had claimed an ability to kill 10 million Americans over the course of the next 20 years, with some sort of agent, that the amount of resource that would be mounted against that weapon would be extraordinary. But that's what we're going to lose in terms of human life in the coming decades as a result of Alzheimer's. So we're going to lose over 10 million baby boomers to this disease, and we are not launching the resource that we need to launch. Now, let's face it, defense of the United States is a primary priority of this country and should be. But we defend the United States in order to defend the lives and financial prosperity of the American people. this is a battle that we also must fight.
But 57% of discretionary spending, according to the National Priorities Project, going into so-called defense, much of which serves no defensive purpose. Is that perhaps a little too much when we have real needs like Alzheimer's research?
Well, I would suggest that in terms of relative priorities, there's no question that biomedical research is critical. But the amount of additional money that we need for biomedical research is perhaps $5 to $10 billion more a year and then increment through time. The amount of additional money that we need for Alzheimer's research, according to the Advisory Council, is probably a minimum of $2 billion a year and incrementing through time. So when you talk about the amounts of money that are needed to fight this disease, at least in the near term, you're not talking about shifting tens of billions or hundreds of billions of dollars in priorities. You're talking about a relatively, in the scale of the $3.9 trillion federal budget, you're talking about a relatively small amount of money. Now, there's no question that every time you move dollars to a new thing, you need to think about where that money is coming from, whether that comes from the defense budget or whether that comes from some other non-defense discretionary account is something that we have to leave to the bullet politics of America, because those, you know, our politicians make those priority decisions. And so it's my goal to raise Alzheimer's as a priority concern for the country without telling politicians where they should take that money, defense or a non-defense discretionary account.
Well, I believe...
I will tell you, there's one other comment I'll make here.
Yes, please.
If you think about, we are spending now as a nation a little over $200 billion a year in taking care of those with Alzheimer's. 70% of that money, or roughly $140 billion, comes out of our entitlement programs, our Medicaid and our Medicare programs. So if you really simply thought that we had a, let's just say, another $2 billion of investment, had a 10% shot of reducing our entitlement spending by 20, 30, 40%. The justification for spending more money is pretty high. Now, of course, the ability to track new investment against reduction in entitlement spending is difficult, but I do think that we have had enough experience with how it is that we could track the additional spending and what it causes in terms of cost reductions to the government, that we should be able to make this allocation. So I would have said, looking at this in longer than 1 year bites, that in fact what we can do by investing in Alzheimer's is reducing our entitlement spending, which is, of course, right next to defense in terms of a big account in terms of government spending. So that's where I would see the money coming from, is a reduction in future entitlements.
That's one way to look at it, and I'm glad you have a way to look at it, because I do think we ought to tell politicians what we want, this being supposed to be a representative government. We're speaking with George Vredenburg, who is a chairman and co-founder of U.S. Against Alzheimer's and the U.S. Against Alzheimer's Network. What does your organization do, and what strides have you made thus far in this effort?
Well, we do a number of things, and actually we call ourselves Us Against Alzheimer's, although certainly pronounced us U.S. Against Alzheimer's. As well. And the Us Against Alzheimer's title, our first name, was to denominate the fact that this is going to be a team sport to beat this disease. And as you say, American people ought to be telling their members of Congress that in fact we ought to be allocating more resource to this disease. So Us Against Alzheimer's has caused a number of networks of individuals from around the country and as part of our society to come together to say exactly what you urged us to say. So we have Women Against Alzheimer's, because women are two-thirds the victims, they're two-thirds of the caregivers. We have African-American Network Against Alzheimer's, because blacks are two times as likely to get Alzheimer's as non-Hispanic whites. We'll be launching Hispanics Against Alzheimer's this year, because Hispanics are 1.5 times more likely to get Alzheimer's than non-Hispanic whites. We're organizing researchers against, we now have 400 researchers against Alzheimer's, because researchers are trying to solve this problem and not getting adequate resources. And we have an Activists Against Alzheimer's, which is a group of activists all over the country that are doing things in their communities, their regions, their states, and even at a national level. But we're bringing them all together so that they can share experiences and aggregate their voice. We have formed up a coalition called Leaders Engaged in Alzheimer's, now 64 organizations, virtually everyone in the Alzheimer's serving field, to add their voice to the need to deal with both a cure for the disease, a means of prevention of the disease, as well as caring for the victims. And we've organized a global CEO initiative against Alzheimer's, because industry in the end is going to be the institution in our society that's going to deliver a new medicine to us. And so we need industry to sign on to our national goal set by the Obama administration of stopping this disease by 2025. We've been working pretty closely now through the global CEO initiative with the G8 and with their new global dementia envoy, as the G8 itself committed to stopping this disease by 2025, to creating a global fund to fund additional research and additional commercial development in this space, and to set an international coordinated research plan. So we're working with them as well, because this is not just a U.S. issue, as important as it is to Americans. It's a global issue. Solving this problem from anywhere, a Chinese medicine, a Russian medicine, adequately tested and cleared by our FDA, was good enough for the people that are suffering from this disease.
Is there good legislation drafted or introduced in Congress as of yet that would do what you think is needed?
Senators Klobuchar and Collins, Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota, a Democrat, and Susan Collins of Maine, a Republican, have proposed a doubling of investments in Alzheimer's research in the fiscal 15 budget, from a little over $500 million to a little over $1 billion, with a proposal that we ramp up the investment to a $2 billion level over the next few years. That is the minimum that the advisory council to HHS with respect to Alzheimer's has recommended be done. So yes, there are champions in the Senate, there are champions in the House. Chris Smith of New Jersey and Maxine Waters of California, definitely a bipartisan pair, if I've ever seen one, are also champions in the House. So yes, there are champions in the Senate and the House, but as you've noted, the difficulty here is changing priorities in terms of our investment in disease, changing our priorities from defense to non-defense discretionary spending. And so changing priorities is difficult in this Congress when we're under such fiscal stress. But yes, we have champions, and there are bills drafted and appropriations proposals being made.
Is one of the hurdles that you face that you need people other than the victims to be their voices? Are family members stepping up to that task?
Yes, they are. Actually, you know, sort of your profile of exactly who is at the centerpiece, the target of this disease, is the sandwich generation, the woman in her 40s and 50s who is now caring for an elder parent and probably now has a kid in high school or in college, and so taking care of two different generations. And so women have been a very powerful and can be an increasingly powerful voice here. So can minorities, for whom health disparities are significant across the board, but for whom Alzheimer's is an emotionally, financially devastating impact on their family. So they are increasingly the voices for change here. And, of course, researchers who want to solve the problem and believe that they have the mechanisms increasingly to do it with adequate resource are great champions as well. So many other people are stepping up. And companies clearly have an incentive here. This is a potentially, looked at in crass commercial term, a huge market for a potential new medicine. The challenge for them is that the science of understanding the disease is still not fully matured, and it is a complex disease involving systems of the brain, and it's not a particular virus or a particular gene that's at issue, so that the target for how to get at this disease is somewhat more complex than HIV/AIDS or many other diseases. It's as complex as cancer in terms of its the sourcing of the problem and the getting at the problem. We need a more resource in basic science so that we understand fully the pathogenesis of the disease, the course of this disease, the number of targets that we can hit in order to stop that process in the brain. And then we need the commercial incentives for companies to invest in this disease. But the marketplace is huge. Companies would like to do this, but they're nervous because of the uncertainty of the science and the length and time and cost of getting a drug through the FDA into market.
I work for an online organization called RootsAction.org, and we got tens of thousands of people to email Congress and the president and say, invest in funding for research into Alzheimer's. And we received a flood of emails from people educating us, making sure we understood that it would be cured immediately if people ate coconuts, that it was caused by chemtrails left behind by airplanes, and so forth. How much myth and misinformation are you up against? And what grains of truth, if any, are in all of this information?
When you match up the American people to a mystery that has not yet been solved, then you begin to get a variety of theories, strong opinions about what it is that can be the best solution. Just look at Malaysian Flight 307. The number of theories about what exactly is the end of that mystery has created enormous conjecture. But the answer is this: yes, there's a lot of misinformation. And when you look at least from the NIH's point of view, their state of the science of this disease, we have not had anything that has demonstrated that ginkgo biloba or any vitamin treatment or any natural process like grapefruit or olive oil or environmental toxin is the cause of this disease. Aggravating, yes, maybe diminishing your capacity to defend your brain against this disease, but not the cause. The cause is, at the core, a toxic protein that develops in your brain, perhaps as a matter of just random interactions through time, but with aging, when you've had more of those random developments, you will have a greater shot at having some misfire, misregulation of the proteins in your brain. Look, we are testing some means of prevention in those who do get Alzheimer's because of genetic mutations or mutated genes in their 40s. We're testing drugs there. We're watching the brains of those people. The development of the last 5 or 6 years in terms of our ability to see the living brain through imaging technology has been extraordinary. So we can now see the living brain. And so when we put a drug into those brains, we can begin to see whether or not they're having a positive effect on that brain. And that's what we're testing with these trials on prevention therapies. But my guess is that this is going to probably be the first drug out on the marketplace will be only partially effective, and then we're going to have a second drug and a third drug, and we're going to get a combination of drugs, and eventually we're going to find that you and I may have very similar brains, but our brains are sufficiently different that, in fact, we each take a slightly different variation of a particular therapy that is developed to stop Alzheimer's. So this is a complex problem. It's going to be solved. We've solved problems equally complex in the past, so we're going to do this, but the speed at which we do it, the pace at which we do it, the amount of resource we apply to get that done is going to be politically constructed, as you have noted already.
What can people best do to help out?
Sign up for Us Against Alzheimer's. Sign up and join us. Sign up to our Women's Network, to our African-American Network, to our upcoming Hispanics Network, and we send out roughly 2 emails a month with very explicit ideas of how you can take a step that will have an impact on this pace, either by emailing Congress or, in many cases, emailing industry on what they ought to be doing, because this is a path that we can change and alter politically, but in fact, in the end, the scientific and the industry communities are going to actually solve this problem.
That website is usagainstalzheimers.org, and we have been speaking with George Vredenburg, the chairman and co-founder. George Vredenburg, thank you very, very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.